Welcome to the Judge John Hodgman podcast. I'm Bailiff Jesse Thorne. This week's episode recorded live at the Masonic Lodge at Hollywood Forever Cemetery in Los Angeles.
I'm not sure the listeners understand this, so I'm just going to say it again. This was recorded in a Masonic Lodge in the middle of a Hollywood cemetery.
Like the most famous cemetery in all of Southern California has in it a Masonic Lodge.
Sure. Why wouldn't it? Of course.
With thrones and all, as they say.
Thrones and all. And in addition to the throne, a very special guest. I don't know if you've ever heard of this person, Jesse Thorne, Jordan Morris.
That's my co-host from the smash hit podcast, Jordan Jesse Go. And folks might know him from Good Mythical Morning, where he is, among other things, Cotton Candy Randy, which I know is your special interest, John.
I am obsessed with Cotton Candy Randy, Jordan Morris's character on Good Mythical Morning. If you know what I'm talking about, as they say on the internet, you know what I'm talking about. But why don't we get to the show?
Let's go to the Masonic Lodge at Hollywood Forever Cemetery in Los Angeles. Los Angeles, you've come to us desperate for justice, and we are here at the Masonic Lodge at Hollywood Forever Cemetery to deliver it. Let's bring out our first set of litigants. Please welcome J. Keith and Sarah.
Hi, honey.
Tonight's case, Linus Item Vito. J. Keith brings the case against his fiancée, Sarah. Sarah still sleeps with the tattered remains of her baby blanket.
See?
J. Keith finds it upsetting to see and touch. He calls it the monster. He wants it out of their bed. Sarah wants to keep sleeping with it. Who's right, who's wrong? Only one can decide. Please rise as Judge John Hodgman enters the courtroom and delivers an obscure cultural reference.
I was very much in my room with my marionette stage, you know, creating these incredibly boring things that I felt were so fascinating and forcing my relatives to come and charging money for them to see my little productions. If anyone would have been paying serious attention to my puppet shows, I would have been sent to therapy very young. Bailiff Jesse Thorne, please swear them in.
J. Keith and Sarah, please rise. Raise your right hands. Do you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth? So help you, God or whatever.
I do.
I do.
Do you swear to abide by Judge John Hodgman's ruling, despite the fact that he skipped childhood entirely?
Yes.
Yes.
Judge Hodgman, you may proceed.
Let the record show that J. Keith waved at me and smiled. Indicating, Sarah, I'm sorry to say, that J. Keith and I have met before.
Yes.
We have worked together before. Yes. And he is currently trying to use that connection to influence this court. I will not recuse myself, J. Keith.
I was trying to be nice.
Thank you.
Stop it right now.
The niceness ends here.
Sarah, it's very nice to meet you. J. Keith, it's nice to see you. Let
the
record show that I am now smiling and waving to you.
Hi, Jesse.
They're definitely Masons. That's what's going on here.
So you are, of course, the host of Go Fact Yourself on Maximum Fun.
Thank you. You guys, thank you. Who canceled tonight?
What's that?
I was like, who canceled tonight?
Paul Rudd.
Ah.
Oh.
No way. Sarah, what podcast do you host?
I mean,
you live in Los Angeles,
sure.
Right?
Sure. Yeah, no, so. Sure. I host a podcast about our kitty cats that I was a dog person, but now I'm a cat person.
Is that so?
Yeah.
But do you host a podcast about that?
No.
Do not lie to me, madam. Do not lie. Just answer truthfully. It'll go much easier for you. Says here you met at the Hollywood Forever Cemetery.
We did.
We did.
How did that come about? It was dancing on some graves. And,
and we locked eyes.
Nice.
It was a movie screening.
Oh, okay.
That they do in the summer.
They do in the summer, right.
Moulin Rouge. And he was a couple blankets down.
And he said to you, "Voulez-vous coucher avec moi ce soir?"
And I said, "Avec moi."
Well, très bien. J. Keith and Sarah, you may be seated for an immediate summary judgment in one of yours favors. Can you name the piece of culture that I referenced when I entered the courtroom? Sarah, what's your guess?
Amelia Bedelia.
Amelia Bedelia. Okay, Jay Keith, I'll put that down.
Is it from that?
Is it from, well, we'll find out. No.
Yeah, I mean, that's what we're doing here.
This is like a trivia question, Jay Keith. You have any experience with trivia questions?
Well, I do. As you and Jesse know, I do a podcast.
Just to answer. Oh.
Sorry, I was buzz marketing. Yes, what was the question? Yes, I am familiar with trivia. And then what was the next question?
What do you what think is the cultural reference?
Who was I quoting?
Oh, I believe, I'm going to say David Sedaris.
David Sedaris. All guesses are wrong, but I'm going to give you, since you host Trivia Game, Go Fact Yourself with Helen Hong on the Max Fun Network, we'll give you an opportunity to answer via trivia question.
Oh.
Okay? This is for either one of you.
Okay.
The first who thinks they know the answer, buzz in by saying their name.
Okay.
The person I was quoting played Francois Truffaut's interpreter in a movie called Close Encounters of the Third Kind. Does anyone in the audience know it? If so, say your name. Martin and Lewis? Wait a minute. Are you ghosts? Are your bodies buried here? Martin and Lewis, say it at the same time on the count of three. One, two, three. Bob Balaban is correct.
Very nice.
And why did I quote Bob Balaban in this case that is on the subject of a blankie, a security blanket? Why did I quote Bob Balaban, trivia master Jay Keith?
I Google the questions and the answers that we write.
I see.
Yeah, I don't actually know everything.
I don't mean to put you on the spot like that. Does anyone know? Anyone have a guess? Bob Balaban originated the role of Linus in Your Good Man Charlie Brown in the off-Broadway production.
I played Schroeder in my college production.
Oh, so you must know him then.
Yes, all of the cast in amateur productions hang out with the original Broadway cast.
Tell me about this blankie that you have, Sarah, or what's left of your blankie.
Sure.
Do you mind if I call it a blankie? Because that's what I called my blankie.
No, I think you should.
Okay. Does it have a name? Does it have a different name, like Softy or?
I was debating whether or not to say what the name was.
Oh, I've settled that debate.
In the affirmative.
It started out as a Mimi.
Mimi.
Yes.
That's a good name.
And now, I mean, is that embarrassing? No.
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 Only
it's awesome.
You know when people are around, but. Then it became just the baby blanket. And it was a piece. Is it still fabric?
Well, you did send in a photo of the blanket formerly known as Mimi.
Oh, my God.
Can we see that photo now? I'm going to do it family food style. Show me Mimi.
Oh, my. Oh.
What we're seeing here, just for the at-home...
I didn't think it'd be so funny. I thought people would be more like, "Oh, that poor girl."
What we're seeing here for the at-home listener is what's left over after the Invisible Man goes to the podiatrist.
I was going to say something that fell off an extra in The Mandalorian. It's very... Mimi's not looking so hot. Mimi's pretty shredded
up
there.
Well, listen. Mimi is... like 45 years old. It was a piece of green flannel that was cut out of the nightgown that my mom wore when she was pregnant with my brother.
Oh.
And so...
So it has real sentimental value.
It does. Wait, it really does.
It's not just one of these bull roar blankets that you get.
No. I mean, when I was 18, did my mom make me a new one? Just in case she did.
Right.
And she took a little piece of this one and put it in the corner as like a joke. It's somewhere just as a, like a backup. But
wait,
this...
I have to ask you. You said that this was a piece of the nightgown that your mom wore when she was pregnant with your brother?
Yes.
Is this like when you get a second dog and you like rub a blanket on the new dog and have the old dog smell it?
She hosts a cat podcast, Jesse.
Sorry.
She hosts an imaginary cat podcast. She doesn't know that trick. Jay Keith, why do you hate this blankie so much? I'll rephrase. Why do you hate Sarah's beloved Mimi so much?
Oh, my God.
Well, first, I want to stipulate I have no judgment about her having this blanket, about her wanting and loving this blanket, about needing this blanket to sleep. This is not an argument about that. This is a dispute about the blanket itself. And I really don't feel I have to say anything else, frankly, just looking at the photo. I find it jarring to look at. I find it jarring to touch, which I do by accident sometimes in the same bed. I find it...
It's as if he steps on a Lego when he touches it on accident.
Yeah, no, it is a disruption when I accidentally touch it. It's not just, ooh, what's that? It interrupts any kind of serenity that I might have accumulated at bedtime, which is a particularly, you know, sensitive time
sure.
when one would want serenity.
What sort of noise does he make when he accidentally touches Mimi?
That is not far off.
All right, that's fair.
I also have been known to leave the room.
And listen, I get that. I mean, growing up, my parents would be like, what are you going to do, like, if you get married? And we're engaged. For now.
And what
for
are
now.
You going
and?
To do? Yeah.
And said, I said, they will just have to learn, like, you know, to deal with it. It's because it's wedged here and it holds my head up and it's so comfortable, especially when it's cold.
You still sleep with Mimi wedged up on the side of your face.
Usually when he leaves. Otherwise, it's just under the pillow.
Any moment that he leaves during the day, you'll just run right over and go, oh my God. Oh, thank you, Mimi.
Sometimes.
No, to be fair, one of her initial solution had been to keep it within her pillowcase. But we all know a pillowcase is not a secure Mimi holding device. I mean, it's going to, there's
not,
very often slippage.
I was going to ask, it's not sentient, is it? It's not crawling around.
Not exactly, but it definitely seems to have a life of its own.
But as you pointed out, Sarah, it does have sentimental value. It has history. You have a piece of evidence that displays this history. Mm-hmm. May we look at that now?
What else do you have?
Yes. You know what? You're right. What else do I have? Jesus fucking Christ. I just show slides and talk to people on stage. Oh, my God. You know, it's the end of the tour, I thought it was going well, but now I see what I'm doing, Jesse.
No, it's going so well.
You know, I used to do comedy on television. I used to have an act. I wrote books and things, and now I'm talking about a baby blankie.
John, I host NPR's least popular program.
The only thing that's going to get me out of this soul hole, honestly, is if I turn around and see something very adorable. So, fingers crossed. Oh, look at that. That's a historical photo, a real one, not one that Jesse's friend from college made. What are we seeing? Can you say to the listeners at home what we're seeing here?
Sure. So this is a little bitty baby, Sarah. That's me.
Yeah.
You're cute. You know, I was probably like, you know, three or something.
Right.
And that's the original Mimi. When it was two sides of flannel.
You saying it only has one side now?
There are no sides.
This is a Mobius strip.
It is now just strings and knots.
Right. And who's that?
And that's my mom.
With you, someone who works at the airport?
Yeah. With giant headphones.
I'm pretty sure that's like I'm pretty sure that's a stock photography model from a bank advertisement in 2005. It's always wearing those giant headphones.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. No, that's who is that really?
That's my mom.
That's your mom. And you're very cozy there. You're not moved by this scene, Jake Heath?
Oh, I think it's a lovely scene. I would be happy to have this photo in bed.
I mean, I don't want that.
Yeah.
Jake Heath, are you opposed to sleeping with comfort objects in bed?
Not at all.
Not at all.
No, I have no problem if this were if it were a teddy bear.
Do you have a teddy bear?
I don't think that's what this case is about.
Do you have a... Still, I'll allow it.
Yeah.
I do not have a comfort...
That you sleep with. No.
You don't have a comfort animal?
We have two actual animals.
Oh, right.
Two cats, yeah.
Two cats. How do they feel about Mimi?
I don't know if they've ever met, because I really try to keep Mimi away from everybody.
Knowing one of our cats, I think it would lead to disaster.
Yeah.
Jake Heath, do you ever sleep with like a body pillow?
No.
Like with a picture of me on it or something?
Not anymore.
Okay. I mean, what I guess I'm asking is, Would you if they were available on the Max Fun Store?
I mean, if it helps the network, sure.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. I'm just doing some market research. That's all.
Yeah. And to be clear, like I totally get about, you know, sleep is difficult and it's challenging and whatever you can do to make yourself sleep better. Right. I totally get that.
I just want to deny that to your fiance.
It's this particular object in this particular condition that
And Sarah, you sleep with Mimi sort of under your sort of, what, are you a side sleeper?
I like if I'm on my back, then I like it just like wedges my head right here. Otherwise, it's like, how do you all do it? Your head just like falls to the side. There's nothing there to sort of like hold it up. So
would you say that this scrap of cloth is your primary source of personal and emotional support?
Sometimes I use a shirt.
Well, how does Mimi feel about that?
Probably not great.
And why is Mimi no longer Mimi? Was it ever a personality, or was it always an it?
No, it was always...
We can take the slide down, please, by the way, and bring the lights back up.
It was always an it. I think it started probably in high school or college.
Right.
And it just became a baby blanket that would just sort of live in my pillowcase. But somebody took it once and put it in my dorm trash can.
Whoa. And what happened? Murder?
I can't say.
Okay. So, but you recovered it from the trash, and now it's in your bed. That's also very comforting to think about.
Yeah, looking at the photograph, I was a little concerned that the adjective that would best describe this blanket is crispy?
It's not crispy at all. It's knotty. No. It's full of knots.
K-N-O-T-T-Y, not it, the other one. Yeah.
It's full of knots.
There are no accidents in this life.
You might be right. You might be right, Dr. Hodgman.
Oh my
we
God.
Know she a nasty freak.
I untangle it like once a week.
You untangle Mimi once a week? Yeah. And what's the cleaning procedure? Does Mimi stink?
No.
All right. How do you clean Mimi?
No. I will hand wash Mimi.
Okay.
Because I think it will deteriorate. And
It will.
And what are you doing when she hand washes Mimi? Vomiting someplace? Or?
I have not been privy to that. As far as I know, it has not been cleaned since we've been together.
It has.
Okay. That makes it kind of worse because you can't really tell.
Sarah jumped in very quickly on the odor question. So I'm going to ask you, Jay Keith. Does Mimi have a smell?
To be honest.
You would never get that close.
Yeah, I would never get that close. You're exactly right.
What is it that disturbs you about Mimi so much?
There's the text.
Because this sounds a little bit like the repulsion I feel when I think about underwater robots.
Underwater rodents.
Yeah, I have a like phobia.
Otter or something like that. Yeah.
What's
like
that?
In a submarine ride at Disneyland?
Yeah.
Okay,
you know how there are those.
Right.
Those you know how there are those animatronic mermaids and mermen down there? Just like constantly waving? And I could fall into that lagoon at any time.
Right.
I'm worried about it right now. I'm closer than I've been in years to falling into that oily water and knowing that they're down there going like this.
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
And it literally freaks me out.
I relate to that.
Honestly, I'm losing blood in my head right now.
Right.
I'm going to lean on this thing. It's called submechanophobia. It's in the books.
Oh, okay.
Well, maybe
I have that.
Well, do you have that kind of reaction to this
blanket?
I think
so. It is not... There's definitely a big part of my reaction that is not logical. It is purely visceral. It is purely some sort of trauma is triggered in me by touching and or seeing it.
Well, how do you feel in your tummy-tum?
My tummy-tum feels boom-boom. No,
my tummy tum feels boom boom. Your Honor. Oh no, that's me. I'm the judge.
Yeah. I do have a bit of the same kind of visceral reaction. Like if I were to see a hard shelled insect scurry across the floor suddenly, like I have a little bit of that kind of panic jump reaction. And yet it is in the place where I would like to sleep.
Make a note that I need to get a hard shell insect. To scurry across Jay Keith's floors.
No, please don't do that.
No, it's going to be great. It's going to be fun. You're going to love it. Keep you on your toes. What would you have me order if I were to order in your favor, Jay Keith? Destroy this blanket?
No, God, no. I'm a sentimental person. I keep a lot of things. I understand.
No. I'm not just saying toss it in the garbage like you're like a roommate in a college dorm.
No,
I mean, destroy it in a very sentimental burning ritual or
no,
Viking funeral type situation. Yeah,
exactly. Send it off raft into the lake in MacArthur Park or something. Yeah. I don't know.
I have no desire for her to get rid of it. I would like to have it not be in the bed.
Not in the bed.
Not in the bed.
Sarah,
which I also understand.
Oh, good.
That's
refuse. Which is fair. You can understand and still say, no, I need to have it in the bed. That's what you would have me rule, right?
Yeah. I mean, I'm open to compromise.
What compromise would you be open to?
Like to put it in like a mesh laundry bag or something so that like he wouldn't feel the strings.
We're already having texture issues. Like, I'm not sure adding mesh to these knots.
and then wrap it in sandpaper and then dip
it in silly putty.
Well, I'll put it in its own pillowcase, maybe.
Put it in its own pillowcase.
Yeah, with a little knot at the end.
With a little knot at the end. A little knotty knot.
Oh boy.
Sarah, J. Keith, I have to ask something that the whole audience is thinking. The two of you are engaged and share a bed. When you are engaged in engaged activities, is the baby blanket in the bed? I'm talking about kissing here.
Sure. I make sure it is out of reach.
Mm-hmm. Do you put a little
blindfold over his eyes?
Would you like to incorporate Mimi into
No.
Oh, look.
No, God, no.
People like what they like. I'm just trying to...
Absolutely not.
I would not yuck that yum, but that is not what I'm into at the moment.
I understand. Just wait till you see this hard-shell beetle that comes scurrying across your floor. Oh, that's my love language.
Sure.
Your love language is triggering people's phobias?
Right now, we're working on building the world's weirdest OnlyFans.
Let's take a quick recess. We'll be back in just a moment on the Judge John Hodgman podcast. You're listening to Judge John Hodgman. I'm Bailiff Jesse Thorne. Of course, the Judge John Hodgman podcast, always brought to you by you, the members of MaximumFun.org. Thanks to everybody who's gone to MaximumFun.org/join. And you can join them by going to MaximumFun.org/join. The Judge John Hodgman podcast is also brought to you this week by Made In.
Oh, when you're trying to buy cookware, it's like there's so many questions, so many choices, so many pros and cons. But you should know, Made In has only pros. Pros like Tom Colicchio, Nancy Silverton, Brooke Williamson. That's right, I changed the meaning of pro from good things to professionals who use Made In, because they do. Professional chefs love Made In cookware because it's got so many pros.
Can I tell you something about Nancy Silverton, one of the Made In pros?
Yeah, I would love to hear it.
My friend used to work for Nancy Silverton, or one of her restaurants, and not only did she adore Nancy Silverton, but Nancy Silverton personally catered her wedding.
That's a real pro move, if you ask me.
Yeah, just like getting Made In cookware. These are people with taste, if you get my double meaning.
I do.
This isn't a Johnny-come-lately company. This evolved from a 100-year-old kitchen supply business, and they work with multi-generational crafters to put together every single piece. So includes carbon steel, stainless clad, plateware, glassware. I know, John, you love all that stuff that you have in your cabinet.
Yeah, I got the glassware. I got the plateware. And I definitely love that carbon steel. And I love their stainless steel. It's got exactly what demanding chefs and I dare say demanding judges look for when they're buying cookware.
And you don't have to find a kitchen supply store. They sell it online. It's delivered straight to your door with the quality that the pros use.
And can I just say, it's at a fraction of the price of other top brands. That's for real. This is really good stuff, and it's really affordable. And yet, as affordable as it is, I'm going to tell you this. Judge John Hodgman listeners get 10% off full-priced items from Made In. For full details, visit madeincookware.com/JJHO10. That's M-A-D-E-I-N cookware.com/JJHO10.
The Judge John Hodgman podcast is also brought to you this week by the good folks over there at Squarespace.
Squarespace is the all-in-one website platform for entrepreneurs to stand out and succeed online. Squarespace makes it easy to create a beautiful website, engage with your audience, and sell anything from products to content to time. All in one place, all on your terms. Time, Jesse.
Have you heard about this Squarespace Blueprint?
No. Tell me all about it.
Squarespace Blueprint lets you choose from a professional layout and build a website for your product or your service or your creations from the ground up. You can accept payments, including Apple Pay, among other things. It is all seamless and easy and comes out gorgeous, whether or not you went into it with big time skills. That's what Squarespace is all about, helping you express yourself and helping you share your work with the world.
Go to squarespace.com for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, go to www.squarespace.com/Hodgman to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain.
Do you believe, Sarah, that you would be able to successfully rest your little head and sleep soundly and have sweet dreams if Mimi were knotted up in a pillowcase? Is it the knowledge that Mimi is there in the bed with you that's important, or the feeling of Mimi against your face?
That's an excellent question.
I only ask the good ones.
It's the feeling against my face. I think only because, as growing up, it was like always something there that was comfortable. So it's just still comfortable.
Sure. But I'm just saying, is the compromise that even you propose going to work for you?
I can try.
You can try. But it's not satisfactory to you?
That would be, you know, if that is what the judge rules, I will abide by that ruling.
Well, of course you're going to abide by my ruling.
Would that be satisfactory to me? Sure.
Let the record reflect that J. Keith said no.
Yeah. Yeah. No. If you want a solution where neither of us are satisfied, that sounds great.
J. Keith, do you cohabitate currently? Obviously you do, right?
Yes.
This is not, you're not getting ready to move into.
Right.
Share a house and a bed and a blankie and everything else.
Yes.
These cats and whatever. Mm-hmm. Did you bring anything eccentric, unusual, very personal into this living situation?
Yes.
I'll allow Sarah to answer the question.
He's a huge Bats Maru fan.
You talking about bad Bats Maru?
I am.
Yeah.
Now, Jesse, J. Keith, you've been set up. I was told about this ahead of time.
Oh, okay.
I didn't understand what it was then, and I still don't understand.
Okay.
After it was explained to me by Jesse. Can you explain, J. Keith?
Not much, no. Bad Bats Maru is a character, is a Sanrio character in the Hello Kitty family of characters.
Sure.
And for reasons that I cannot explain, I have been collecting items with Bats Maru on it for over 20 years.
He's a naughty penguin who's friends with Hello Kitty.
Yeah. Yeah.
How many items are we talking about, Sarah?
I mean, when I moved in, we got rid of quite a few.
And there are still quite a few. Yeah.
Did you get rid of them in a burning ritual of some kind?
We sold quite a few and got
How many items would you estimate now? Ballpark figure.
Are we talking about just ones that are on display currently?
Do you have a rotating exhibition?
Yes, there are some like a museum. Storage.
Sounds to me like J. Keith's got a storage unit.
I mean,
we're in the dozens, if not. Oh, okay, sorry.
I was going to say like 100, 150.
100. What are we talking about? Figurines?
All of it.
Face cloths?
Uh-huh.
Where are they displayed?
Name it. They're there. We have primarily kept them, to the bathroom.
So there's a bad Bats Maru bathroom in your home.
Yes,
when you go boom boom.
There is a Bats Maru. Bats Maru. So we call it. We call the bathroom.
Is there a bad Bats Maru bidet in your bad Bats Maru bathroom?
No, that's one of the few things we don't have. But I would not be opposed to getting one.
Okay, that's not. I don't. We're already too close to your personal lives now. I'm sorry that I brought up anything that deals with your bum. Let's keep it to your boom boom.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly. you want me to order him to get rid of a couple of dozens of pieces in return for I don't know. I think he wants you to keep Mimi in like a safe or like a blankie jail.
One of those things from Ghostbusters they used to trap the ghosts.
Yeah. Yeah. Sure.
Very unstable.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Very unstable. The EPA doesn't want those. Mm-hmm.
EPA is the bad guy.
I'd be happy if, like, you know, there were 12 less Bots Brew things. Sure.
This is what you need to say, Jay Keith. I am not on trial here. Go ahead. Try.
I am not on trial here.
Yeah, you are.
Oh.
I've heard everything I need to in order to make my decision. I will be go into my chambers, which means kneeling behind this beautiful mahogany Masonic temple desk. I'll be back in a moment with my decision.
Please rise as Judge John Hodgman exits the courtroom.
Good luck, honey.
Sarah, how are you feeling about your chances in the case?
About my what, I'm sorry?
Your chances in the case.
I feel pretty good. I feel pretty good. I'm mixed about how I feel about this situation. But I'm feeling pretty good. How are you feeling?
It's my job, Sarah.
It's your show. I'm so...
Jay Keith, how are you? Stick to your cat podcast. Jay Keith, how are you feeling?
I was feeling good till the whole Bots Maru stuff was mentioned, and now it seems to be I have to pay for this decision in Bots Maru item removal, which I'm not as much looking forward to.
You already knew that I was your boss at the Maximum Fun Network. You didn't know I was doing opposition research.
I did not know about the oppo.
Sarah, how does it feel? How does it change your feelings about the case to know that I have my blankie cubby in my bed right now?
You don't.
I do. That's where Cubby lives.
Where
How
exactly?
How could I sleep without her?
Where exactly?
Right next to my pillow, sometimes under my head, sometimes between my fingies. The feeling is very comforting to me. Mm-hmm. And sometimes when I take a nap, I put her over my eyes.
Same.
This is a really cute conversation, but I...
We'll see what Judge
Hodgman...
I have
to remind you that this is very uncomfortable.
We'll see what Judge Hodgman has to say. Please rise as Judge John Hodgman re-enters the courtroom and presents his verdict.
As the blood returns to my head, I've been thinking about this case. First of all, one question I might have asked is, your mom, is she still living?
Yes.
And how do you think she would feel knowing that your beloved is repulsed by her gift to you?
She'd go, yeah. That's what she would say.
She agrees with him?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Good.
Yeah.
Well, I've really enjoyed hearing about Mimi.
Oh, my God.
From you, Sarah. And Jay Keith.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed hearing you say, me, 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 me. No, I couldn't help myself but make that joke. That doesn't exactly reflect my verdict. You know, I had a blankie named Blankie. Mm. Blankie came with me to college. Blankie was in bad shape at that point. Blankie was mostly less blankie, more whole at that point. And I did not have any self-consciousness about it. But ultimately, I sent Blankie home, and I don't know where Blankie is right now, and now I wish I had Blankie.
Aww. Blankie went to live on a farm.
Blankie went to go live on the Blankie farm?
Mm-hmm.
Upstate. Yeah.
And so it comes to me to decide whether or not to send Mimi to the Blankie farm. To exile in a drawer. Do you think that Mimi has feelings?
No.
Okay, good. No, I like that. It's hard not to anthropomorphize things that you love, like a Blankie or a stuffed animal or a particular brand of gin. All of these become things that you... trick yourself into feeling that they have feelings.
It represents something.
Yeah. But I'm glad that you don't feel that this has feelings and that you're willing, Jay Keith, you should note that Sarah is willing to put her beloved thing into a suitcase and imprison it there for your comfort. That's a big sacrifice.
I didn't hear suitcase as an option.
Oh, I'm sorry. Pillowcase is what I meant to say.
Yes, yes.
Sarah is willing to put her beloved object into a pillowcase and knot it up and imprison it there for your comfort. Now, Jake Heath, I've had some fun saying that I'm going to trick you by putting a beetle in your house and that sort of thing. But your comfort is important. Everyone's comfort in a cohabitation situation, particularly if it's one that involves hugging and kissing and sharing the same bed, is very important. And I am forced to believe you when you say, this makes me feel sick to my stomach. The fact that you have to leave the room, if not the house, sometimes when this thing comes out,
yeah,
is something that I take very seriously. Now, of course, my recommendation to all romantic partners who live together is to not share a bed. If it's within your means, get the largest bed possible so you have enough space to sleep and toss and turn and fart in. And then you can come together when you want to. Of course, it is well known that the best arrangement for romantic partners is to have two separate king beds in villas that are separated by a reflecting pool, which is still an ambition for me. I just don't want to deny Sarah her Mimi. I'm sorry. And I think that the sacrifice and the compromise that she suggests is not going to work for you, Sarah, ultimately. But I think you ought to take what you can get. I think that you need to put Mimi, you got to put Mimi in a, better to put Mimi in a pillowcase than in a corner. You know what I mean?
Nobody puts Mimi in a corner.
No. And there are pillowcases that zip up. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And some of them are specifically like barriers for pests and insects, because whatever is living in Mimi wants to come out.
Just turn it inside out.
I think that's a big compromise. I will order you to get rid of 6 of these weird penguin items. Just put it in your storage unit.
I don't
put it in your storage unit. You don't have a storage unit?
I'll get a pillowcase.
You know what? Yeah. That's exactly right. Thank you, Jake Heath. You're a good podcast host. This is what's going to happen. You're going to put Mimi in a pillowcase.
Okay.
And you're going to put 6 of these bad penguin items in a different pillowcase.
With their sharp cornered heads. And,
I don't know. Maybe you can get some washcloths or something with this character. And you're going to sleep with them too. And they're going to have my picture on them. This is the sound of a gavel. Judge Sean Hodgman rules that as all.
Jake Heath and Sarah, thank you for joining us on the Judge Sean Hodgman podcast.
Hey, when you listen to podcasts, it really just comes down to whether or not you like the sound of everyone's voices. My voice is one of the sounds you'll hear on the podcast Dr. Game Show, and this is the voice of co-host and fearless leader Joe Firestone.
This is a podcast where we play games submitted by listeners, and we play them with callers over Zoom we've never spoken to in our lives. So that is basically the concept of the show. Pretty chill.
So take it or leave it, bucko. And here's what some of the listeners have to say.
It's funny, wholesome, and it never fails to make me smile.
I just started listening and I'm already binging it. I haven't laughed this hard in ages. I wish I'd discovered it sooner.
You can find Dr. Game Show on MaximumFun.org.
Video games can make you laugh.
They can make you cry.
They can even make you sing.
We're the hosts of Triple Click.
It's a podcast about video games.
This is an exciting time for new games, from Diablo to Final Fantasy.
From Starfield to Street Fighter.
From Zelda to, oh, who are we kidding? We're just gonna talk about Zelda.
Whether you play games or you just like hearing about them, we've got you covered.
Find us at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Bye.
Judge Hodgman, we're taking a break from the stage at the Masonic Lodge at Hollywood Forever Cemetery in L.A. We've got some things going on. Let's talk about them. Not least of which are a strike.
Yeah, Jesse, I literally have nothing going on other than getting a chance to speak to you and all of our podcast listening friends on Judge John Hodgman once a week. Thank you for being a member of Maximum Fun. But all of my entertainment, writing, and consequently acting work is on hold as the WGA, both East and West, continue to strike for a fair living wage and to ban artificial intelligence robots from professional entertainment. Sorry, robots, but
We literally need to eat. You don't. So there you go. And I'll just say, I was out on the picket lines today and I saw our friend, Starley Kine.
Oh, hi, Starley Kine.
Television writer for Dave and Search Party, and also one of the greatest radiophonic creative minds in the biz, host of the late and lamented Mystery Show, which you can still listen to and should. But Starley has, since over the past couple of weeks, Starley has been shutting them down, shutting down productions. She and her friends stayed out picketing till 2 or 3 in the morning, I believe it was, to shut down a shoot of the TV show Evil. And they learned, and they were schooled by the Teamsters, by the crew. They're like, you have to picket and you have to keep picketing. Don't walk away, because if you don't walk away, we won't cross your picket line. And consequently, nothing against the show Evil, they're great producers, and Asif Manvi is on that show. But this is how we do it. We are picketing and we are stopping productions to make it clear that we won't stop asking for basic living wage dignity and humanity, literal humanity in the entertainment process. And I just saw Starley today, and it's just been so exciting. So thank you for all of you who have echoed our message. So thank you for everyone who's amplified the message of the strike in worlds in which... So thank you to everyone who's amplified the message of the strike in New York, Los Angeles, and all around the world in our listening audience. And if you want to know what's at stake and why it matters even to you, a person who may not actually be a professional television or film writer, go to the link in my bio at Instagram. It's the quickest way to get to the WGA Writers Strike Hub, which lays out all of the things that we're fighting for and all of the things that the studios are absolutely refusing in the most egregious fashion. So that's what's going on. I'm glad to say it's going well. I mean, we're being heard and we're being understood, and we're being understood as part of a larger labor movement that is trying to claw a little back from of the gains that have been made in... And we're part of a bigger labor movement that is trying right now to claw a little back from the incredible gains and profits that have been made over just the past 5 to 10 years by big companies. You know who they are, both entertainment companies and otherwise, and get back some dignity for the workers. So again, entertainmentcommunity.org. If you want to support people financially who can't work during the strike, and that includes all of those workers who in solidarity are not crossing the picket line, the crew and the Teamsters and so forth, and are not getting paid as a result. This community fund helps them too. And I just want to say to any members of IATSE out there or the Teamsters, we thank you for standing in solidarity with us and helping us learn how to be better strikers, because you're really, you know, we're all in this together, and I really appreciate your help.
Well, let's get back to the stage of the Masonic Lodge at Hollywood Forever Cemetery and Judge John Hodgman live.
Let's bring out our next set of litigants. Please welcome to the stage Laura and Lucas. Our second case of the night is Tater Tort. Laura brings the case against her husband, Lucas. Lucas calls himself the humble son of a potato farmer. Laura says that's wrong. His father was actually the manager of a large potato chip company. Who's right, who's wrong? Only one can decide. Please rise as Judge John Hodgman re-enters the courtroom and presents an obscure cultural reference.
Potato chips. How my mouth just drips. Potato chips. Crunchy, crunchy, crunchy. Crunch, crunch. I don't want no lunch. All I want is potato chips. Potato chips. No matter where it is, you'll find a bag around. Could even be at a bar or at a picnic. Jesse, even a baseball ground. Bailiff Jesse Thorne, swear them in.
Laura and Lucas, please rise. Raise your right hands. Do you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God, or whatever?
Yes,
I do.
Do you swear to abide by Judge John Hodgman's ruling, despite the fact that his 10-year campaign to be sponsored by Utz Potato Chips has been a total failure?
Yes, I do.
Yes.
Oh my God.
You're wearing them down. You're wearing them down.
Tom Utz, we had the Utz people on the line.
Yeah.
I was DMing with Tommy Utz or whoever is running the place. Mm-hmm. And he's like, yeah, we'll definitely sponsor your podcast. And then that dude ghosted me. Oh, I could have had the crab chip for free. I could have had those cheese balls for free. And also potato chips. Oh, by the way, are you done your thing?
I think so, yeah.
All right.
Judge Hodgman, you may proceed.
Lucas and Laura, you may be seated for an immediate summary judgment in one of your favors. Can either of you name the piece of culture that I referenced as I entered the courtroom? It's the lyrics to a song. Laura, why don't you go first?
Oh, it's the lyrics to a song?
Yeah, that's a hint for you. It's a song called Potato Chips.
I'll say that it's an Utz potato chips jingle from...
Okay, that's a good guess. You're picking up on a lot of context clues.
Yeah.
Lucas, well, you come from a long line of potato chippers. Surely you know all the songs about potato chips that have ever been recorded in this country.
Lucas, you're chip people.
Yeah.
It wasn't the
salt
beast
of the earth, huh?
Yeah. Oh!
Hey!
It wasn't the B-side to the Buckner and Garcia's Pac-Man.
Pac-Man Fever?
Yep.
No, it's not arcade. Oh. It's not arcade themed.
It was the B-side of Disco Duck.
By Rick Dees.
By Rick Dees.
Yes, I'm very old. So
there's a sign for a bar near here that says Disco Duck Boogie and Cocktails. That's true. That's real.
I walked by there. They're having a party in there tonight.
Oh, big time.
Go check it out. I get nothing from them. No sponsorship from Disco Duck. No sponsorship from Utz. It's a mess, Lucas. You know what it is? Well, you know. You're a farmer. You know what it's like to work hard, to dig in the dirt, to grow ideas, only to have them taken from you by coastal elites in Los Angeles, California. All guesses are wrong. That is a song called Potato Chips by Slim Gaylard, an incredibly incredible, fun recording artist that my friend Adam Sachs introduced me to many moons ago. And honestly, I should have sung it. I should have sung it instead of read it. You wouldn't have recognized it, but it would have been more fun. Maybe at the end of the show. Meanwhile, Lucas and Laura, let's hear your dispute. You're a son, you're a humble son of a potato farmer, I hear.
Yes.
Where did you do your farming?
I didn't do the farming.
Oh, right. Your dad.
Yes, it was my father, yes.
Or your pappy, would you say?
No, father. Okay. Or dad, yeah.
Okay. Where did your father do his potato farming?
In a little town in Sugar Camp, Wisconsin.
Sugar Camp, Wisconsin. This is pretty goddamn adorable so far. This is pretty good god or whatever damn adorable. And why, Laura, do you say that this is not true?
Well, he uses this to introduce himself in polite conversation with, you know, coworkers or strangers. And that's like the first impression that people get of him. And it's not, he's not humble. he is the son. His dad is technically farmed a potato field, yes, but he didn't own the land. He didn't own the machinery. He was the manager of the field. He managed like five guys. So technically, yes, he was a potato farmer.
He managed a potato farm and a Five Guys?
No.
There were five.
They're famous for their potatoes.
From what I understand, there were five guys
that would only be during the busiest times of year, planting and...
Yes.
But I hear that he was the manager of a potato chip factory or something.
No,
that was incorrect.
There was some
misunderstanding. Yes. I thought we were going to have a fun conversation about potato chips.
So the potatoes were used for a very big
large potato company. Chip conglomerate.
Yes.
Which one?
The big one.
Should we say? Not Utz.
Let's just say he worked for a certain Granny Goose.
I don't know all the big potato chip conglomerates. I'm just a simple fan of Utz potato chips. A regional brand started by a family that doesn't return my phone calls.
Maybe,
please, sir, yeah. What's the big one? You can tell me what's the big one.
Frito-Lay, which I think is owned by Pepsi, which is owned by Yum Brands.
Right, yeah. Of course. Yeah, well, you sure do know your farming. Why do you introduce yourself as... I mean, literally, I'm a humble son of a potato farmer?
Yeah, so that started sort of as a joke.
Okay.
Because it was probably some election season. It was some election season somewhere, and you know how politicians always son of a diamond miner, even though the asshole owns the whole diamond or emerald mine and is a billionaire.
Are you referring to someone?
Maybe.
Were you suggesting that diamond miner is a folksy profession? That was your poll for folksy profession? I get it. The lights are hot up here, but
they don't call them.
If you're the one in the mine, maybe you can get.
They don't call them blood diamonds for nothing.
I think he was making an oblique reference to a certain owner of a certain social media platform, and a guy who makes the jankiest cars on earth.
Oh yes.
Sorry.
Well, sorry I didn't get it.
So you started as a joke in an election season.
Yes.
And also it had the side benefit of annoying Laura.
Oh, always, yes, of course.
Right. And how often does this happen?
Oh, these days it's far fewer, because everybody now knows me as the humble son of a potato farmer, so.
Your reputation precedes you.
Yes, exactly.
Laura, is it the case that this habit has dwindled?
Oh, yes. Ever since he started working from home, and there's less and less new coworkers, which is sad, but.
Yeah, but he could be going on into chat rooms and saying it.
That's true. He could. He could if he would stop working sometimes.
Yeah. Laura, why does it bother you?
Well, originally it's because I didn't, when I met Lucas, which when it was like 20 years ago, his dad was not a farmer. He was like the manager of a senior living facility, right?
Senior care facility at that time. Yeah.
And then, so it was not a thing when I knew him. And then when his coworkers came up to me, I was like, is he really the son of a potato farmer? I was like, no, he's just selling his
thing. Wait, he doesn't explain it later?
No.
But you laugh at it privately? It's not a joke. You don't explain it and get the laugh?
No. Everyone understands his reference to Lamar Alexander at the Iowa straw poll or whatever.
I have to explain is the thing. I'm the one who has to explain to his coworkers that he's not really...
You have to do the punchline to his setup.
Yeah. And it's like, I don't want to do it. I don't like it. He's not a potato farmer, although technically he is, you know, because he was, but... it just annoys me. Also, he says the humble son. Totally lies.
It annoys you. I like the idea of people knowing what his dad does for a living, and then you go to them, which was managing a senior care center, and then, sorry, this is a little roundabout. It's the last night of the tour. I don't know English anymore. I apologize. I like the idea of you going to people saying, them saying, is his dad really a potato farmer? And you thinking, is that how his dad describes taking care of senior citizens?
Yeah, right? no.
You just got to give the jello to the potatoes. Turn on the Wheel of Fortune for the old potatoes.
Yeah. One of the taters is acting up again.
Turn off the lights. They like the dark.
Yeah.
Tater's crying because he's remembering the war.
Oh my gosh.
Some of these Tater's kids don't visit him.
Well, I would say that your father was involved in two valuable professions, taking care of elderly people and making potatoes that I enjoy eating. But what the hell do you do as his son? Are you running for office?
Not yet.
Are
not
you
yet.
Announcing?
No, He's but running, I, no, I'm He's saving. Running. I'm saving that in my back pocket for later.
Okay, good. What do you do for a living?
I'm a software engineer.
A software engineer.
Yes.
So this is just a joke, right?
It's also like a sort of. It's not the humble son. Yes, the humble part is definitely a joke. The potato farmer part is just a way for when I'm introduced to various California coworkers to be like. I come from a very rural area, I guess.
And is that true?
That is 100% true.
Have you visited, what's it called?
Sugar Camp.
Sugar Mouse?
Yeah.
West yeah. Wisconsin or whatever it is, Sugar Camp,
yes,
Wisconsin.
Yeah, I thought I was from a small town, but his town beat my small town. It's right. way smaller.
Is it important to you to feel a connection to your rural growing up? Did you have a rural growing up?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, I was there the whole time until college.
Yeah. What kind of, would you go fishing?
There was a little bit of fishing.
Okay.
Tiny bit
it,
of hunting.
What was it like in Sugar Camp? Oh, tell me all about it.
That, I think we just summed it all up. A lot of trees.
Yeah, I would think that there is probably some maple syrup making going on.
There is definitely, yes. That's right. How it got its name, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
You chase a hoop with a stick?
You didn't make any maple syrup, though. Yeah.
Did you? When the potato crops, you know, every year, when do the potato crops come in?
It'd be the fall.
In the fall?
Yes.
So in order to ensure a good harvest, would you have a lottery?
Have a
I do, John, I'm waiting for an Island of the Blue Dolphin joke next.
Is it that kind of rural community?
No. Yeah. Okay.
Why is it important for you to maintain this connection to rural roots and even play them up with some folksy language?
Just to sort of to remember, I guess.
Uh-huh. Would you ever move back there?
Hell no.
Right. You don't have any standing here, do you, Flora? I mean, you're just annoyed by your husband's joke. Husband, right?
Yes.
You're just annoyed by your husband's joke.
Oh, yeah. A lot. Yeah. Yeah. I don't have any standing. I'm not a farmer. I know farmers, and I know, like, to say that you're the humble son of a potato farmer, like, connotes a certain lifestyle growing up, you know, waking up with the chickens or whatever, and...
You mentioned that you knew some farmers, Laura.
Oh, yes. So I grew up in a small town, not as small as Lucas's.
Where would that be, if I may ask?
Oh, it's called Caro, Michigan. Uh-huh. Our graduating class was like 150. His graduated class was 60.
Right, that's quite small.
It was multiple towns to make up
that
city.
We're not talking about your town anymore.
So, like...
Where's Caro, Michigan? Is that Upper Peninsula or Lower Peninsula?
In the Thumb.
In the Thumb? You ever go to a Great Lake?
Oh, yeah.
Which one you like to go to, Lake Michigan?
Well, I mean, we used to go to Lake Huron, and then the water level started going down. So now you have to walk, like, I don't know, 100 yards to get to where the water is.
Boy, that's...
It's really sad.
That's not fun to hear about.
No, it's sad. But we both went to college in the Upper Peninsula, so we used to go to Lake Superior and stuff like that.
Did you major in leaving pies to cool on windowsills?
Yes, pasties.
Pasties, that's right. That's a mission. What is a pasty? I've read about them.
A pasty is, well, actually, Lucas is the expert on pasties.
I am quoted on Wikipedia for my pasty presentation in college, yes.
Say that again. Say that again into the microphone.
My name is mentioned in Wikipedia as a reference because of a presentation I created in college that had to do with the pasty.
When you meet someone new, lead with that.
Yeah, right? That's much better.
You don't need this confusing-ass potato thing.
Jordan, I love you. And I'm really glad you're here.
I love you too.
But in
guys, I love you.
We all love
in
each other.
In the future, don't f***ing steal my verdict.
I have not seen the verdicts ahead of time.
But you got there first. The rule of comedy. Of course, I was forced to wait. I was going to have to kneel behind that dumb desk and pretend that I didn't know exactly what I was going to say. Now I'm going to have to come up with something else. I can do it.
Oh, wow.
Sorry, Daddy. I'll give you a bag full of my teeth.
Oh, no!
Out!
Now they like it.
I know. Yeah. Before I make my verdict, Jordan, do you have any other questions that you want to ask, or Jesse?
I don't know. I don't really have a specific question. I guess my question is to find out which of you two is a real farmer. And so I guess I want to know whether you drink buttermilk for breakfast. Like a real farmer does.
Yeah. No. And on this stage is farmersonly.com / pies.
Let me ask you this question in your rural communities. What did you call pancakes? Johnny cakes, flapjacks, flatbreads, sweet rounds?
Mummies, sweet
just pancakes.
Just pancakes, yes.
Just pancakes, all right.
Breakfast roundies.
Laura, are you offended on behalf of the farmers that you
know? Yeah. I kind of am because I know farming families. Like, I have friends that I grew up with because I grew up in Carroll. And
yeah, we've heard a lot about it.
Yeah, sorry.
Ooh,
it's like they everyone was like involved with the harvest, like the whole family, and they, you know, would they know when beans are planted and how to tell when it's ready to harvest them. Like, you don't know when to harvest potatoes.
Oh, I didn't claim I was a farmer though.
That's true.
He's just the humble son of a potato farmer.
But like, my friends are not farmers now, or well, one of them is. One of them was. She's never not going to be a farmer.
It offends.
Yeah, you. I'm the farmer Lorax. I speak for the farmers.
There we go. All right, I've heard everything I need to in order to make my decision. I'm going to descend into my chambers. I'll be back in a moment with my verdict.
Please rise as Judge John Hodgman exits the courtroom. Lucas, having heard the verdict earlier, how are you feeling about your chances in the case?
Wowie zowie.
Laura, how do you feel?
Slightly better than I did earlier because he had come up with a thing that he wanted me to do. I shouldn't have mentioned it. Shoot. that if he won, he wanted me to wear like a t-shirt that said, "The Humble Son." A wife of the humble son of a potato farmer. And I was like, I don't want to wear that shirt.
Wait a minute.
I know. No, that's why I shouldn't have mentioned it.
No, that's okay. I could. It was written down here. I could have done my job. Lucas, if I rule in her favor, you want me to make her wear a shirt that says, "A wife of the humble son of a potato
Not
farmer"?
Not a wife. No.
What the hell is going on in Sugar Camp, Wisconsin?
Just wife of the son. There's
many,
no plans
how
for
many,
any.
How many wives does a
no,
man
no, no.
need?
No, no, no. One, just one.
To usher elderly people into death.
No, my God.
No, I'll restate that. How many wives does a man need to raise a spud in Sugar Camp?
Just one.
Just one. Okay, interesting. I'm still down here thinking. Jesse, you want to ask any more questions?
Please rise as Judge John Hodgman re-enters the courtroom and delivers his verdict.
Laura Lucas, I've given a lot of thought. Do the thing Jordan said.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
I mean, it's a genuine brag. You are quoted on the Wikipedia page for pasties, I presume?
Yes, yeah.
That's a great brag. That's a great the best conversation starter there is. What did you do today? Because everyone did something. It's a lot better than saying, "How are you?" It's not a joke. It's just true. Try it out. You're going to see. Suddenly, it's going to be okay to talk to people. The 99.9% of our audience who say, "I'm an introvert," suddenly you're going to realize, it's fine. Just ask people, "What did you do today?" Now, all of a sudden, they got a story to tell. And then you also got a real brag. You got a real brag. A humble son of a potato farmer is a funny thing to say when people are aware that you're making a joke. But it does kind of make fun of your dad. Kind of make fun of farmers. Not cool. And also, it's not meant sincerely. You're a real brag. You're quoted on a Wikipedia page about pasties. Then people are going to say, "What's a pasty?" And I don't blame them because I don't even know. What is it?
Oh, it's this meat pie that has potatoes and onions inside. It came over from Cornwall.
No, rutabagas. Not potatoes.
Okay.
Now see how we're getting to know each other? Like, I want to know you now, but if you said, do the thing that you used to do.
Humble, through the line.
Hey, my name's John Hodgman. How are you?
Oh, I'm Lucas, the humble son of a potato farmer.
What is wrong with you? I don't get what this guy's up to. He's playing some kind of weird mind game with me, and I don't want to get to know him better. I wonder, his wife seems nice. I bet she's probably from Michigan. I'll talk to her instead.
Oh, I wasn't into the joke until I heard his delivery. Oh. I mean, it's all in the delivery.
In any case, I rule in favor of Laura. This is the sound of a gavel. Justin Hodgman was over there.
That's it for this week's episode. Thank you to our litigants who joined us on stage at the Masonic Lodge at the Hollywood Forever Cemetery in Los Angeles. Thanks to the folks at the lodge who were wonderful and gracious hosts. A very special thank you to my friend and yours, John, Mr. Jordan Morris.
Jordan Morris, co-host of Shootin' the Breeze, Jordan's and my somewhat annual podcast about cheese. By the time you're hearing this, we will have recorded our big settling of all your cheese beefs for this year's Shootin' the Breeze. So look for it in your members-only section of your MaximumFun.org membership. It'll show up in the bonus content feed soon.
And even if you're not already a member of Maximum Fun, anyone can listen to Jordan, Jesse, Go, the show where Jordan and I do, there's no premise to the show.
Zero
it's
premise.
It's won awards, I promise. People like it. It's a funny show. It's the most meaningless show that exists, but it's very funny. Evidence and photos from this show are posted on our Instagram account at instagram.com/judgejohnhodgman. Follow us there. Join the conversation about this week's episode on the Maximum Fun subreddit over at maximumfun.reddit.com. Judge John Hodgman created by Jesse Thorne and John Hodgman. This episode recorded by Matthew Barnhart and produced by Valerie Moffett, Richard Roby, and Jennifer Marmer. Our thank you to all of them. Richard was on the road with us. So grateful to have his help. We'll talk to you next time on the Judge John Hodgman podcast.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.